Your personal data. We like to use that term, personal data. But do we really consider it personal? In the sense that, if someone were to have access to quote-unquote your personal data, would you feel violated? 20 years ago, I started college at Drexel University, and one of the things that all of the teachers made us do was put our freaking social security number on every single written assignment that we handed in as a personal identifier number or unique identifier. By my junior year, they did change the policy and gave us a made-up unique identifier. But because Drexel is a five-year program, I had 3 years of homework and paper and assignments that had my social security number written all over it. And all of that crap was stashed in my parents' basement for years. And when my mom had to clean it out, I had to help her shred all of it to make sure that my social security number didn't end up in the wrong hands. So when you turn on the news and you find out that 143 million Americans' social security numbers and other personal data was hacked, I was overcome with a certain sense of dread. So if you haven't figured it out, this week we're going to discuss the Equifax hack. I'm going to lay out a timeline and specific details, which may have been omitted because there's been a lot of coverage on this, and try to tell a narrative of how this happened. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is Sourcecast Episode 88. Before we get to our main story, yet again, this was another slow week for acquisitions, but I wanted to take a moment to remind listeners why I cover this acquisition news. While we often go down a technological rabbit hole, Sourcecast is predominantly a podcast to help people who actually purchase technology. This podcast is really about making informed purchasing decisions. So I really like to understand how the companies that I may be purchasing products from are spending their money. A perfect example is Hewlett-Packard. They literally bought themselves into oblivion. Between Palm and Autonomy, that is a company that acquired themselves to death, and then they had to split apart. And if you're someone who was on the buying end of all of that stuff, between them growing and making acquisitions, if you were a customer of all those various companies, you had to deal with all of the paperwork of combining all of those entities. And as they split off and sell off, you have to deal with all the aggravation of that. So as an educated buyer, if you were watching the trends and you saw that a company that you were interested in buying products from was maybe spending erratically, maybe you would stay away from them. So that is the intent of the acquisitions, and that is why there will always be an acquisition segment on this podcast when it is warranted or when there's information to share. So on to our main story, Equifax. Let's start with the basics. Equifax is a credit reporting company. You may or may not directly do business with them. You may not know that they had your personal information. But the likelihood is, Equifax probably did have your information if you have a credit card, or if you have a mortgage, or if you have a loan. So 2 weeks ago, it was reported that hackers gained access to some of Equifax computer systems and potentially compromised the personal information of 143 million Americans. Equifax reported that hackers gained access to systems containing customers' names, their social security numbers, birth dates, and addresses. And because those four pieces of information were stolen, it has become, quote-unquote, a nightmare scenario. Those four pieces of information that were exposed are generally the pieces of information needed for consumers to apply for many forms of consumer credit, such as credit cards and personal loans. So that means the hackers, or the people that the hackers potentially sell this information to, will have a much easier time creating fake credit accounts under your name. Equifax also stated that in some cases, hackers gained access to certain Americans' driver's license numbers as well, because that just makes it so much better. So you may be listening and you might have a mild sense of outrage, and maybe you even feel a little bit bad for Equifax because these hacks happen, it's terrible for them, it's really going to hurt their business, people are losing their jobs over this. But I suspect as we continue this program, your sense of ire will increase dramatically against Equifax. And let's start with this first point. This entire situation was preventable with a simple patch. According to thehill.com, the hack was caused by a security issue in Apache web software, basically the Apache Struts. The flaw in Apache that was used by the hackers had actually been patched. What that means is there was a fix for this problem in mid-March. Equifax's breach occurred in May. It should be noted that the patch has to be applied to all of the individual servers, and that is a time-consuming process. But again, known security flaw for a company that houses very specific personal financial information that could essentially be used to ruin your life, and all of that information was housed in one place. Here's the second thing that will probably get you very upset. Last week, when Equifax reported the hack and provided a website for customers to determine whether or not they were impacted by the hack, and then to also sign up for credit monitoring. In the fine print, the company stated that if you took the year of free credit monitoring, you are giving up your rights to pursue legal action. Thankfully, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman took aim at Equifax and publicly announced that his staff was contacting the company, urging it to remove the legal liability clause from the fine print. According to the Washington Post, Eric Schneiderman said the following: "This language is unacceptable and unenforceable." Schneiderman's office announced a formal probe into the Equifax breach. Among the questions were whether any consumer information has found its way into the black market, according to a person familiar with the investigation. On Sunday of last week, Equifax did rescind the legal liability language from the clause, allowing customers to sign up for the free year's protection without giving up their rights to pursue legal action against Equifax. Issue number three. Bloomberg reports that three of Equifax's senior executives sold nearly $1.8 million in shares after the company learned internally that it had exposed the private data, including Social Security and driver's license information, of 143 million people. According to a TechCrunch article, the transactions in question were initiated by Chief Financial Officer John Gamble, who sold $946,000 worth of stock. Their president of U.S. Information Solutions, Joseph Loran, dumped almost $600,000 of stock, and the president of Workforce Solutions, Rodolfo Plotter, sold off $250,000. These transactions were not pre-scheduled trades, and they took place August 2nd, 3 days after the company learned of the hack. And our final issue. As I mentioned earlier, upon the announcement of the hack, Equifax created a website where customers can go and check if they were impacted by the information leak. But several news reporters claimed that when they plugged in random information, the website came up and said that that random information was at risk for a hack. To provide an example, a TechCrunch writer, Sarah Burr, tried different names in the website and different spellings of her names with different number combinations for a Social Security number to see if the site reported a potential hack. Almost every made-up person that she created showed up as potentially impacted on the site. The only time she did not get the message was when she entered Elmo as the last name and 123456 as the last digits of the Social Security number. Several reporters from several different websites performed a similar exercise and noticed similar results. So even the information that they're providing to determine whether or not you're hacked is potentially fraudulent. So this situation is a mess. And here I am drudging up all of these negative things that can leave you worried and concerned about your potential credit in the future. Is there anything that you can do to help yourself right now? According to Free Code Camp, there are three things that you can do right now. Number one, this seems to be universally agreed upon: freeze your credit. I'll post a link in the podcast episode where you can find information on how to do that. By freezing your credit, that will prevent any additional lines of credit in your name and against your Social Security number from being opened, which is going to potentially make it difficult for you to open a new credit card. And also, because I was personally curious, this will not impact your existing credit cards or mortgage payments. The second thing to do is to get copies of your credit report from all three agencies and keep them on file, so if there's a discrepancy in the future, you have a record. And the third thing is to file your taxes promptly. And I was like, huh? What does that mean? According to Freed Code Camp, one of the most common identity theft scams is when a thief files taxes on your behalf and then claims your income tax refund. Thanks to Equifax, all of the data that the thieves need to do this is out in the open. So next year, file your taxes as soon as possible. By the time you hear this podcast, this news item will be about 2 weeks old. And I think the initial fervor is going to die down, but this is a story with long-term ramifications. We have no idea how long this data is going to be out there and how it's going to potentially impact people. These hackers can wait a year. They can wait 2 years before they sell your information, and it's going to be just as viable because you can't get a new Social Security number. So I am going to continue to monitor this story. We're going to keep bringing up news items as new ramifications unfold, and I'm going to keep you, my listeners, informed. Stay safe out there and keep your information safer.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.